ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie.
See what we're up to.
See them on Twitch at ESPN 1000 Chicago.
Louis Riddick's going to join us here in a moment. Did a great job again at the NFL draft.
They all had, that was a great performance. I thought Greeny was fantastic as the host in his role. I thought Lewis was great. I thought the whole presentation was fantastic.
Greeny talked about that yesterday. He did do a fantastic job. You know, it's just, and he said, you throw it to Mel, you throw it to Lewis, you get their input, and you keep the rig on the road.
Listen, and he was filling big shoes. I mean, Trey's done a really, really good job for years.
And Boomer before that, right?
So, I mean, Greeny did fantastic.
I love the draft. Yeah. I love watching the draft. It was a great night, a memorable night. Louis Riddick joins us right now on the Corona Hotline. And Louis, great job as always. I just have one request for a new rule on this show. Now that Justin Fields has been drafted, no more car analogies. So, like, Ferrari, Fields, I'm not comfortable after the Maserati Mitch stuff.
No, you get no argument out of me, man.
Do you understand?
I think there's a lot at stake here. So I think we'll always have fun, but I think this is important. It's important that they develop this young man the way he needs to be and take care of him the way he needs to be and that he does his part. I mean, there's a lot on the line in the coming months and years, quite honestly.
Let's start there. You mentioned developing. Is it going to be a good fit with Matt? Now, full disclosure, I've been critical of how Matt handled Mitch, especially at the end, Lewis. But whether it's warranted or not, I do have optimism that because this is Matt's guy, that Matt will be better developing him. And I think Justin's obviously a better player than Mitch. But I think this marriage is going to work. How do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, you know how that goes. When it's your draft pick and it's someone who you personally have invested the time in to vet, scout, select, and then develop. Yeah, there's just, I mean, it's human nature. You're naturally going to make sure you do everything and throw everything at it to make sure that transaction works out. And that doesn't mean that you don't do that for guys who aren't necessarily, quote-unquote, your guys. But, I mean, let's just be real. We don't have to sugarcoat anything. I mean, that's just the way it's going to be. I know Matt has been scouting this and kind of really kind of like looking at this position for a long time, you know, going back to even a year ago. I think when you move up and you make that big of a bet to make this kind of selection, you damn well better be all in on it. Both him and Ryan were in on it. I think there won't be a relationship issue or a fit issue from a personality perspective or anything like that. I think Matt knows quite well where Justin is at in his developmental arc and what he needs to do in order to continue have that going in the way he wants, how he's going to need to be adaptable, how he is going to have to be willing to and able to adjust on the fly if there are things that Justin just isn't comfortable doing in the context of Matt's offense. And he'll have to change that immediately if that's the case, and depending upon how fast he's coming along. So I think, look, this is about – all about making the player comfortable and having him continue on this path to development at a clip that, quite honestly, needs to be accelerated to some degree, because we know from a talent standpoint he's much better than the people that they have on the roster. Two, because he knows that him and Ryan need to win because the pressure will be on. Three, because the expectation is that this team get better on the offensive side of the ball, particularly when you move up to draft the quarterback 11th overall. So there's a lot of things that are going to all come to a head here and put the spotlight squarely on Matt's head. He recognizes that, he realizes that, and he accepts that, because there's no one to blame for where they are right now other than the people who are making the decisions there, and they've got to find out a way to get out of it, and that's what they've been trying to figure out all offseason. And I didn't know if they would be capable of pulling off this kind of transaction, given where they had to come from or where they had to go. Thank goodness for them that Justin Fields fell to where he did, to where they felt that he was in within their range to go ahead and go and get him, and that they had someone who was willing to move back and trade with them that didn't want him. I mean, so there's just a lot of things have happened in a good way to this team to get this young man. Now they got to do right by him. And so this is where really the clock really starts.
All right, let's talk more about that. Do right by him. So let's say he is showing well in training camp, that he shows you that he's pretty good and pretty ready. Are you more of a believer of the Russell Wilson philosophy that if he shows you, it doesn't matter that you sign Matt Flynn, in this case Andy Dalton, you play the kid? Or you've worked with Andy Reid many times, that Mahomes sits that first year no matter what. He gets that little taste at the end, and then he's ready to go more. So this is all in the context of he's showing pretty well. What do you do, Lewis?
Well, I mean, it's a subjective decision. I mean, honestly, if he's showing pretty well, he can protect himself out there. He knows enough to where the offense isn't, you know, hamstrung by his inexperience. His ability to make big plays kind of offsets those limitations that he may have due to inexperience. And yeah, you put him in there. You without a doubt put him in there. And I think this is a much different situation anyway than what Andy had with Patrick and Alex Smith, because Andy wasn't going anywhere. His job wasn't in jeopardy. Their offense was humming right along. As a matter of fact, Alex Smith, you know, was playing at a Pro Bowl level clip, and he went to the Pro Bowl that year. So I don't think anyone's expecting Andy Dalton to go to the Pro Bowl. I don't think anyone's expecting Nick Foles to go to the Pro Bowl. So it's not one of those situations. I think any signs of an accelerated growth curve for Justin Fields, and you come to a consensus that he would give you a much better chance to win football games, and it would not harm him to put him on the football field, will result in Justin Fields being on the field. Now, I think Matt's going to have to manage expectations once rookie minicamp start, veteran minicamp start, training camp starts, because I'm sure the very first time Justin launches a 34-yarder in practice, Chicago media is going to say, put him in there now. Just make him the starter right now, because he's going to look different. As a matter of fact, I would say it's not even going to take that.
Yeah.
Okay, he's going to walk out of the locker room.
Starting!
And people are going to, they're going to look at him, they're going to look at Andy, they're going to look at Nick, and they're going to go, oh, please, just line him up. And that's natural. And you know what, again, I'm sure if Andy Dalton and Nick Foles heard this, they'd be like, what the hell are you? That's very disrespectful. No, that's being honest. We know that. They know it. So managing expectations, I know this is something that's very much so in the forefront of Matt's mind, because he knows what's at stake. He knows why he moved up to draft him. He knows that the difference is going to be huge. Hell, he saw it down in Kansas City. They saw Patrick throwing the football in a way that Alex saw Patrick throwing the football in a way he couldn't throw it. But their situation was different. This situation, like I just said, there's an urgency here. So he's going to have to sit on his hands as much as he ever has in terms of wanting to put a young quarterback in, but you can't sit on him too long.
Right.
I would not hold this kid back, especially if you knew it was going to give you a better chance to win. I would not hold him back.
Lewis, no. I'm very optimistic about this marriage. I think it's going to go quite well. I just have a couple questions. A, why was he the fourth quarterback picked? And more specifically, as a self-admitted Shanahan sycophant that I am, and how he does things offensively, why did Shanny decide on Trey Lance ahead of Justin Fields, in your opinion?
I think from everything that I have heard, from a psychological testing, football intelligence testing, you know, objective standpoint, meaning the test that they were giving them, the interviews that they had, and then obviously there's some subjective evaluation, and that they just felt as though Trey was a better fit for what they wanted to do, and they jived well better with him than what they did with Justin. And that's not to be critical of him, because there's still many, many, many people who feel though Justin Fields is the second best quarterback in this draft, if not vying for the first, you know, the number one quarterback in the draft, along with Trevor. So there's so many subjective parts to this that some people will never accept because they were predisposed to thinking, look, Justin Fields came out, when he came out of high school, it was him and Trevor neck and neck, and so that's the way it still should be, regardless of anything that anybody else says. Well, these teams, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt. They have access to a lot more information than maybe we do on the outside. And I just believe that Kyle just felt as though, given what they want to do and given what Trey was showing them, that he was going to be, he was the guy. And he wasn't the only person who felt that way. Many teams felt that way about Trey Lance. Many teams felt that way about Trey Lance when you're talking about Zach Wilson or Trevor Lawrence. They felt he was smart. He was ready. He had more upside than all of them, than every single quarterback in this draft, every single one. And when I talked to him, and the intel that I gathered as far as the amount of responsibility he was given in that offense and how much it was very much so like a pro-style offense, and a pro-style offense very, you know, much so like San Francisco's is in terms of personnel usage, formation variation, use of pre-snap motion, ball handling from with the quarterback from under center. It all looks like San Francisco. It all looks like Atlanta. It all looks like Green Bay. It all looks like the L.A. Rams, who all run, you know, kind of a very, very similar offense. So for Kyle, I'm sure he was sitting there going, the only thing, the only knock that I have against this guy is that he's only had 17 starts. He's only played really one season. So what am I supposed to do here? You know, should I really pick him? Should I bet on the upside? Should I bet on me? Should I bet on me being able to take care of this kid and surround him with great talent? Well, he felt as though he could and that he should. So he did. Mm. Now we're going to see. From what Matt tells, you know, from talking with Matt and seeing and reading what Matt has been saying, he was enamored with Justin Fields. He loved Justin Fields. And he's, again, he's not the only person. So he's going to need to take care of him. He's going to need to design an offense now, Tommy, that really fits what Justin does. He cannot make him into something that, or make him do stuff that he's not comfortable with doing. If he's not comfortable with being a drop back, you know, first and second down thrower, then he's going to need to incorporate a lot more of the play action, change the long point, get him outside the pocket type of stuff that he was doing with Mitch later in the season. But that isn't necessarily a staple of what they do,
right?
Of what, how Matt got brought up. But he can't be rigid, and he knows that. So there's a lot of moving parts here. Matt selected him. Him and Ryan selected him. They know where he is at in his developmental arc, so they better have a great plan for, okay, so he comes in here, he's not that comfortable with the drop back game. This is what we're going to change in order to get him, you know, off the ground and running right away. And then we'll sprinkle in some more of the stuff that we typically do, and we'll see how he handles that. But we want to make sure, hey, look, this is what you did at Ohio State. This is the RPO stuff you did at Ohio State. This is the deep passing game you did at Ohio State. Here are the rail combinations you like. This is going to be a collaborative effort of the highest order between the Bears and Justin Fields. Because to do anything else is just going to be career suicide for him and Ryan Pace. Right. It just absolutely would be.
Yeah.
So let's sit back and watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, and they collaborate well, Lewis. That's one thing they do well. Lewis Riddick joining us. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
I know you love that word.
I know. We love it. We love it.
I say that in the whole city of Chicago. Like,
We all do that to us. It's a buzzword, Lewis. Yeah. So you saw my tweet, when you were on with Cap and Hoodie, I was like nodding on the treadmill listening to you talk about the Bears being in purgatory. And I've said that before, football hell. Are they now out of football hell because they have Justin Fields?
Well, it's the first step, and it's a huge step, okay? It's a huge step. But here's the other thing I want to say, and I'm going to talk about this on TV today, and we're going to tape something here in about an hour. The next step is that offensive line, in that running game, they better get it going.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot put this all on this kid. He is not, in his developmental cycle, he's not ready to just carry this football. So I'll tell you this. They get rid of Charles Leno. They bring in Tevin Jenkins. They're going to put Tevin Jenkins at left tackle and protect Justin's blind side or Andy's blind side or whoever is going to be in there initially. Tevin Jenkins better be ready to go, man. He better be ready to go. Elijah Wilkinson better be ready to go. Jermaine Effetti better be ready to play much better than he did last year. Cody White here, James Daniels, you better stay on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
And you better be able to move people off the line of scrimmage and not what I saw last year watching them twice on Monday Night Football. Better not look like that. David Montgomery better not be getting his head knocked off like he was last year. Because if they are, and it's 2nd and 7 and 2nd and 8 and 2nd and 9 all the time, it's going to be hell. You're not going to be in purgatory. You're going to be in hell again with a good young quarterback. So as much as we're going to talk about the quarterback situation, and we should, and there should be a ton of optimism. I said that the night of the draft. Chicago fans should be dancing in the streets, said, oh, my God, it wasn't as bad as we thought. We got a quarterback. Okay, that's great. Let's party. Let's have some fun. And then when we, you know, kind of sober up, let's think about this. Juan Castillo and Matt Nagy better look at this offensive line group and go, come hell or high water, we better get these guys playing their ass off, because if we don't, this quarterback has no shot. And that offensive line, you saw it.
Yeah.
I saw it. We all saw it. That's the next key. That's the big, big, big factor right there.
Lewis, we all know what Justin does well. Great deep ball thrower, an elite athlete, mm-hmm. processes things well, sees the field, mm-hmm. all that. What is it that he needs to work on as he takes the step into the NFL?
I think it's his composure under pressure. His composure and his decision-making. When things start to break down, don't try to show everybody how much of a great decision-maker and or navigator of the pocket you are, and force the ball into bad situations. Take unnecessary sacks. Make dumb decisions where you're putting your team in jeopardy. Get the hell out of there. Take off. Use that 4-3 speed. And then let's go ahead and line up again on first down. Don't make those decisions when they're signed to send in 5 or more at you that are going to cost us. Just don't do it. Don't do it. Throwing the ball away is good. Taking off and running is good. And living to fight another day is good. I think that's the number one thing with him, that when you watch it and you break it down, that's where he got himself into trouble, almost as if he wanted to show people, I'm a great pocket passer.
Yeah,
you know what? You will be. You put in the time, they develop you right, they get enough weaponry around you, and they protect you. You will be. But don't think you have to prove anything to anybody by standing in there and taking ridiculous shots and or forcing balls into bad coverage situations where you know the likelihood is the ball's going to get tipped up or intercepted or something, and your team's going to lose games because of it. Don't do that.
Real quick Don't prediction before we let you go. Is Aaron Rodgers with the Packers on opening day or on another team?
Oh, damn. You know what?
That's almost, Lewis, right, that's now almost as important decision for us here in Chicago as our own quarterback situation.
You're absolutely right. You know what? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say he's not. I'm going to say he's not there. He may not be on another team, but he's not there.
Ooh, interesting! Like a holdout and waiting,
right,
forcing
like,
their hand.
Because if you're the Packers, like you can't. Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can. I don't think you can do this. You just can't do it. What a crappy situation that they put themselves in. That's just bad management up there. That'd be a whole nother show. But they mismanaged that bad. They got cocky on that one. They got real cocky, thinking that they can just do business the way they've always done it. We're the Packers. I'm the GM. I'm the management. You're the hired help. We can draft your successor. We did it with you. We'll do it to you. And it doesn't matter. We don't have to tell you anything, blah, blah, blah. And when GMs get into that kind of mindset, they usually get embarrassed and or put in situations like this. So now let's see how you get yourself out of it.
We preach. Great stuff, Lewis. Appreciate it. Great work on the draft. Can't wait to see you back in the Monday night booth. All the best, Lewis.
Thanks, Lewis.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Okay, there, Lewis Riddick, NFL insider, used to be in the front office with Washington, with Philadelphia. Monday night booth now was all over the NFL draft. Let's react to that. A lot of good stuff there. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
Even if you're not spending as much time in the car, don't miss a minute of Waddle and Sylvie at home. Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Again, if you missed the Lewis Riddick interview, it's going to be posted soon on the ESPN Chicago app. You can always get that on demand. Listen for the entire interview, as we mentioned, the Waddle and Sylvie shorts now, too.
Get your shorts here.
Waddle's had one really big question. I mean, there have been several questions, but I think you came to the table yesterday very passionate about, will Matt Nagy be able to develop Justin Fields the right way? And I think that is is what Lewis, even though they're tight, mentioned several times.
Yeah.
That they have got to find a way to protect him. They've got to find a way to help him with the run. That's part of protection too.
Sure.
You cannot go and start saying we're going to commit to the run. Next thing you know, he's throwing it 45 times when he's not ready to throw it 45 times. And I think Lewis said that over and over and over again. The line better be good. Matt's play calling better be good. And that's how he's going to develop as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, again, we talk about this ad nauseum. You identify talent, then you have to develop that talent. And part of that development is what plays are you calling for this player? How are you protecting him with the running game? What are you asking him to do? And like I said, maybe this is just blind faith. I'm not telling you that Matt Nagy and Justin Fields are going to be Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. I'm telling you, I feel like the relationship's going to be better and will provide you more good play than the relationship that existed between the previous quarterback and the coach.
Right. Now, and it's his. Like you said, it's his.
Yes, it's his. This is his quarterback.
Right.
But, like, I was critical of how Matt handled Mitch last year.
Yes, you were.
Because I don't think that Matt did some of the things that Lewis was talking about. I don't think that they protected him enough with running the football. You identify that Mitch was limited, and it took them to the last six games when Mitch came back to actually get him out on the edge, cut the field in half, and ask him to do the things that he did well. That's a coaching issue in a lot of ways. Look, it's also a limitation issue with your quarterback, but the coach has also got to coach the player to accentuate what he does well. You can protect Justin Fields even as a rookie quarterback starting by running the football, by getting him out on the edge, letting him rely on his athletic ability, and not asking him to do the things that Tom Brady's asked to do in the Tampa Bay offense.
Right, right.
Like, bring him along. It's not a matter of whether or not he can process everything well or he's got great aptitude. It's that this is a step up in class. Ohio State is a huge university. They play in the Big Ten. He's played very well on the biggest stage under the brightest lights. But safeties play differently. Cornerbacks are faster.
The edge rushers get on top of you. We said it with Cuddy. Yes. Where we're like, look, make it the Cutler system. Have him have some input. Yes. People raged against it because Cuddy was so polarizing. But that goes with any quarterback. Right. We're seeing it more and more these days. They used to always try to fit the quarterback in our offense. And now they understand when they get the quarterback who's good, we need to cater the offense to the quarterback and what he does best.
Yes, and when you get that quarterback that will then gradually become comfortable, then you can open things up. Then you can ask him to do more things as time goes on. But in the meantime, if he plays, which I think there's a very good chance that he will play early, you have to go out there and develop him properly, much in the way Lewis was talking about.
Boland says, I'm glad we all of a sudden care about the offensive line. Mitch needed it even more, but I guess that just sucked for Mitch. And we said
it. We screamed about it all year, about helping him with running the football.
Let's go to Scott in Highland Park. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Scotty?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
Season ticket holder. Very excited about Justin Fields. But I got to tell you, I got to agree with Waddle. Is can Matt Nagy, that's the elephant in the room, can Matt Nagy coach this guy up? So my question is, it's not a matter of if he's going to play, but how much, because if he doesn't play Justin Fields enough this year and the Bears have a mediocre season, then what is Matt Nagy's coaching future? Is he going to say, well, I didn't play the guy, so I should get another year? I think we at some point we're going to need to see a sample size. Wanted to hear what you guys thought about that. Love your show.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really important dynamic here. I mean, does Matt succeed in this environment with his guy?
And if he cocoons him in, like, this bench area and plays Dalton a lot of the year, like the caller said, is he going to say, well, wait a minute now, I still have him. He wasn't ready. I need another year now to coach him.
Oh, listen, again.
That's what he was bringing up.
No, I know. I mean, like, you know how I feel about that. There's no job security issues with these guys. Like, I don't know what else anyone needs to see. Like, even Lewis was talking to us about how Matt needs to coach this situation upright because he knows he needs to win. I'm just on the other side of that conversation and have been all along.
You've been very in on it from the beginning, and so far it's trending that you've been right.
I mean, he won the Coach of the Year as a rookie. Again, this isn't me.
This is George's.
This is George.
Yeah.
He's been to the postseason 2 out of the last 3 years. He's finally got his quarterback, and you're going to bounce him when?
He finally found us a quarterback.
This is a three year reset. They hit the reset button on it on 3 years.
All right, we'll see where this goes. Waddle's World is where it goes next. 1 hour from right now, get your would you rather questions in. We also have some White Sox to talk. Tony La Russa, what do you do with Luis Robert? So much coming up, including Waddle's World.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Waddle's World.
And in Chicago, Tom Waddle. He can't run, he's not fast, but he gets open.
Bears legend.
Amazing.
9 career TDs in the NFL.
He caught everything that was thrown and took every hit that they could give him.
Tom Waddle.
Let's get weird. Let's get weird.
Welcome to Waddle's World. Come inside.
Let's get weird. Let's get weird. Weird. Get weird. Weird. Get weird.
Let's get weird.
Yeah, let's get weird. Waddle's World's brought to you by our great partners at Wintrust Community Banks. They are Chicago's banks. Find your nearest Wintrust Community Bank. Visit wintrust.com/findus. Member FDIC. Cubs are beating the snot out of the Dodgers. 7-1 is that game's going to go final soon, right? It's a 7-inning job today. So
right, doubleheader.
Yeah.
And they hit Kershaw pretty well.
Ooh, Kershaw only lasted one inning.
It's his
shortest outing, I think, in his career, wasn't it?
And the Cubs didn't have their best lineup. I mean, they've had injuries. And then the Chris Bryant story. You know, there are a lot of Cubs fans who are pounding their chest saying, we told you about Chris Bryant. We told you. We told you he's really good. We told you. We told you. I'm just saying, this is going to still be a, quote, you know, Chicago, I don't know if sports tragedy is too much, but he's going to finally get good, and you're going to have to get rid of him. The Cubs are going to have to get rid of him. And, like, this isn't great.
Well, you're going to have to get rid of him. Why? Because you don't have enough money to pay him?
Right. Right. They don't want to pay him.
Right.
We know this.
Well, you don't have to get rid of him.
They don't have to. They right. don't. But they're going to.
Right.
I'm just telling you that.
Yeah, this they're going to trade him.
Like, a lot of people are saying, see, you gave up on Chris Bryant. Shame on you. Well, look, when the Cubs give up on Chris Bryant in July, what are you going to be saying then?
See, Cubs gave up on Chris Bryant.
This isn't a good story any way around, right?
I don't think so. Like, listen,
this is lose-lose.
Look, again, who creates the narrative? The player creates the narrative. Chris Bryant was phenomenal in 15, Rookie of the Year, MVP in 2016, right?
Yep.
And then
good 17?
Yeah, like, but then he has struggled with some injuries and never really reached the same level that he showed in 15 and 16, right?
As a premier hitter,
yes. So now, as a Cubs fan, you're asking the question, I know he's a good hitter, I've seen it, but where is it at? Why is he tailed off a touch? And for a guy who wants $300 million, are you comfortable giving $300 million to a guy who has tailed off in his performance? These are all valid questions.
Right, right.
It's the same crap as being critical of what the Bears general manager has done.
And you know what Scott Boras is doing right now? He's going like this. What does Dr. Evil do, right?
Isn't Dr. Like
that. You know, puts a pinky in his mouth. That's what Scott Boras is doing over Chris Bryant because, yes, now maybe he'll be able to go to the open market.
Yeah.
And get what
I'm with you. I think he's going to get traded too, and I think he's their best hitter. He's been their best player for, I don't know, X number of years. I can argue that Rizzo's been their most consistent guy, but Bryant's always been their best player.
Would you rather have Chris Bryant and a bunch of nobodies or trade him for a bunch of prospects and rebuild the team?
If I'm the Cub fan, I want to keep all the good players. Mm. Like, I don't care what it costs.
Javi had 3 errors today.
Javi had 3 errors?
Yeah. Well, that's, but the rest of the team isn't playing well.
What do you mean? I don't know what you're saying.
Like the, I'm saying if you trade away Bryant at his highest value, you're going to get the most back for him possible.
That's the only good.
And, like, and they got rid of Darvish. Like that's the would you rather. Would you rather have Bryant here and the rest of the guys continue to struggle and you don't really win anything? You just keep, we're okay. We're maybe, we're good. We're, and or,
I would say to you, like, but you're the Cubs. You should have all the resources in the world. Go out there
no
and
money
sign
in the bananas.
Some guys.
There's no more money.
But
no
they're, not in last they're not in last place anymore.
Right.
Hey!
There is certainly congrats. They're not known.
Where's the Pirates? We are the champions?
In fact, they're tied with the Reds, aren't they?
We are not in last place of the Central.
Bom, 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 bom.
But what if you could choose, wouldn't your choice be that your owner would
say
be
yeah.
willing to spend money and sign Chris Bryant, and if you don't
Biblical
think Javi's
losses.
The guy, maybe
oh,
get
old Correa. Are you aware of the financial situation?
You ask what I would like. I understand the reality of the situation.
Tough times on the
it's
north
like
side.
Moses parted the sea. There was a bunch of money, and then he closed the sea, and he said, "No more money."
I'm not.
No more money, man.
Losses.
We read that.
I
know. It was in the
but
book.
You just asked they the question. Give me your baseball voice again. Give me your baseball. Give me your baseball voice again.
That was Casey Kasem's voice, or the Would You Rather voice.
No, it was this little
no,
baseball
it was a would
voice.
You rather voice. Yeah, it was a.
Yeah, would
oh,
really?
Would you
it was
rather
a would
have
you
Justin
rather
Field for 15 years?
No, I went to Chris Bryant question.
Huh?
I went to Chris Bryant question.
Would you rather have Chris Bryant and the team be bad or trade him for a bunch of prospects?
Okay, but you could still be bad with a bunch of prospects.
That's true, too.
Like, I mean, like, I want them, if I'm a Cubs fan, I want them to sign Chris Bryant. I want them to do a better job at developing players, and I want you to spend some damn money. That's what I want.
There's
I didn't
no
want
money.
You
I'm trying to think of other
I'm
biblical references.
I'm telling you what I want. That's what your question was. I was answering your question.
I haven't read that book very much, though. So,
Sylvia wanted to talk about an
Cubs
NHL
won,
story.
By the way, it is
7-1.
Yeah,
7-1.
Well, no one breaks down hockey like we do. What's with this Tom Wilson dude?
Yeah, Tom Wilson
from the Capitals, who's like banging people's head on the ice and then only getting fined $5,000 for that.
Yeah.
I was on Twitter yesterday and there was Tom Wilson outrage all over the place. Like they should ban him from the league. And then I'm driving into work today listening to Carmen and Carmen's like, hey, the
Carmen
NHL
wanted a piece of him.
Yeah, the NHL fined him $5,000.
$5,000. I saw like an above camera angle. Did Wilson get kicked at any point? I thought
okay.
I saw.
We've got a bet here.
What?
Chris thinks you're going to get mad if I say this.
What's that?
You guys will. So just Waddle, continue on with Waddle.
No, don't.
It's a good prop.
No, you just opened the door. You got to walk in.
Chris Bleck and I, producers of the afternoon show here on ESPN 1000 and host of the Bleck and Abdallah program, have no freaking idea what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
Tom Wilson?
That's
cool.
He's a really good
player. We don't
player
know a ton
on
about
the
it
Capitals.
Either.
They
yeah.
were playing
the Washington Capitals.
Yes. They were playing the Rangers, and this guy's got
New
a
New York Rangers.
He's a tough guy, too.
We can do this together.
He's a skilled, tough guy.
Yes.
Paint the picture for us, because we...
Yes. And he's a burly guy. He's a tough guy. He's a good, skilled player.
Good hair, too. I looked him up yesterday. I'm like, Tom Wilson... For a thug, not a bad looking dude.
He's a looker, is what you're saying.
Yeah. But yet,
a lot of hockey guys are ruggishly handsome.
Would you?
No.
Would I?
What
are you doing?
You ask the question again, I'm going to give you an answer. No, I wouldn't.
Does he have a hard jaw? Hard jawline?
That I didn't look that closely. I noticed the hair.
I've heard of a square jaw. I've never heard of a hard jaw.
Like if you punch it, your handle break.
Never heard of that. I've never heard of a hard
He's
jaw.
He's got the old hard jaw.
I've heard of a glass jaw.
So, dude, well, Google it. He took someone's head in the crease, all right?
They just took their head.
Yes.
And brought it into the crease.
Pardon me.
Jeez.
There was a scrum.
Where's
the
crease? By the way, where's the crease for the guys?
Right by the goal.
We know that. Okay.
It's the goaltender's crease.
We know that.
Come on.
No, we didn't know anything about this story.
We're going to do this together. We're all going to learn together.
Nobody breaks down hockey like this show.
That's why I wanted you guys to explain it to us.
And we are.
Hockey breakdown is a team sport.
Uh-huh. Yes.
That's what we're doing here. And so he took someone's head
as
they were already falling to the ground, and he basically slammed it on the ice.
Oh, you can't do that.
All he got was a $5,000 fine, and then he took Panarin to the ground.
And then there's a scrum, and then Panarin, the bread man's there, and then he pulled the bread man's hair, and he pulled him down to the ice.
You can't hear
Did he go with the hair? Was it the hair pull? Did he not have his helmet on?
Google it.
All right. I thought, though, that there may have been a situation.
Boyle's got to have us on the hockey show and break down Tom Wilson.
Did somebody kick Tom Wilson with skate in the process? Like, I'm not defending Tom Wilson, but I saw something on somebody bringing it down.
You can't ask us.
Yeah, we're asking you.
Tom Wilson, do you know that Tom Wilson has been known to sharpen his skates extra sharp? To do damage to hockey players.
You got that stupid grin on your face, so I know that you're just being a turd.
With the Mod Squad hockey board just told me.
By the way, did you know the Capitals and the Rangers square off again Wednesday night? So it's must-see television.
Oh, man.
Must-see television.
When is that, Wednesday?
That's Wednesday.
Can't wait to ask you about it on Thursday.
Right? Yes. Eddie, if you're listening.
We'll tell you whether or not the Capitals and who was it, the Rangers, they get after it again.
Thank you for educating us, because we pretended in the meeting.
Listen,
but,
it was a team effort.
Did you think I was bluffing?
We were nodding.
Silva said to me in the meeting.
You got to bring up Tom Wilson and Waddle.
He said, hey, can we talk about Tom Wilson and Waddle? I said, are you damn Skippy? We can.
Sure.
Yes, we can.
It's like we're talking Beach Boys? No, that's Brian Wilson.
That's Brian Wilson. Yeah. Okay.
So but that happened before the show?
Tom Wilson, the volleyball. That's where you were going
in the IDOT bullpen. And Carmen was there, too.
He was.
And IDOT reminds you, driving responsibly in construction and work zones really is a matter of life or death. Learn more online or through social media at lifeordeathillinois.com. And Tom Wilson should learn a thing or two about life or death when he's slamming someone's head down in the crease.
We can't do that. I got a little bit more sports-a-roo when we come back, and then a whole lot of nonsense. That's next.
Waddle and Sylvie, weekdays, 2 to 6.
Follow on Twitter at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87. ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Just how bad did it get back in the day? Like, really bad?
With bad tools, manscaping?
Yeah. I mean, like, really bad?
Well, I mean, no,
at some point,
not really.
You just don't you just stop and you go, I'd rather be a grizzly bear than be bleeding to death.
I'm going to tell you this, okay?
I can't wait.
There was back in the day when I used to use scissors down there. Very dangerous.
Oh, no.
Very dangerous.
Sharp scissors or like school scissors?
More like a smaller shears, but still enough to do damage. I had to be really careful. Rob
well,
says,
as long as you're not getting all cocktailed up before you go into the den, shearing den.
Rob says, those Manscaped ads always make me throw up a little. Today was the worst visual.
Yeah. Well, there's words in the ad, too, that you're afraid to say because you don't think you can say it.
And all of a sudden the copy changed. Yeah. I'm like, whoa. I want them to sponsor our uncensored crosstalk with Carmen and Yurko, because then we could get more graphic regarding, you know, manscaping.
Right.
If the people want that.
Did you know that Chili Davis got fired again?
I saw that. The players weren't happy about it either. They backed him.
Mets fire hitting coach Chili Davis and assistant hitting coach Tom Slater.
Adam tweets us and he says, listening to Waddle and Sylvie try to explain the Tom Wilson nonsense to Bleck and Abdallah. And then he's got the old, the Sandler movie when he's back.
Stop talking,
when he's
like
back
what
in
you
school.
Said.
He says, everyone in this room is now dumber for having to listen to it.
I'll say this. You guys explained it. Now I get it. And I looked up the video.
We described it correctly.
There was a head in the crease. Yeah. You're right.
What about the hair pull? Did you see a hair pull with
Panarin?
I didn't see a hair pull.
There's a lot of grappling going on. I did not see the hair pull.
Panarin had his helmet on. I didn't see a hair pull.
Man wrestling going on.
I did see Wilson wrestle Panarin to the ground. But also, Chris, look and see if one of the other guys, his skate, he kicks Wilson before Wilson goes ballistic.
Some kicking and jostling going on with the skates.
I thought
as well.
A guy was down and like his skate was backing. Like, you got to watch them skates, man. They're awful sharp.
When did hockey go back to like the 70s where they're just
not wearing
like
rollerblades?
They're letting everyone fight and they slam heads down and then only get a small fine for it.
Hey, $50 in a 12-pack. That's what we're going to fine you. Did you guys also see Russell Westbrook has secured another triple-double average for the season?
To me, this is a fascinating discussion.
He had 14 points, 21 rebounds, 24 assists in their win over the Pacers, 154 to 141.
You know, there are different topics in sports that we become immune to, where we're like, I don't really care about that anymore.
Right.
You used to say it about Ozzie. When Ozzie Guillen was the Sox manager, he would say stuff. After a while, he just said stuff, and it was no big deal. My question is, he is putting up some of the most historic numbers ever. You know, there's like three guys who's had these triple doubles with 20 and 20 with rebounds and assists.
How about this? He has 178 career triple doubles, three short of Oscar Robertson's record with seven games left. It was the third game in NBA history with 20 plus rebounds and 20 plus assists. Westbrook and Wilt Chamberlain had the other two.
Think about that. Think about those names. So my question to you guys is, why are we immune to Russell Westbrook putting up these numbers? Why do we all kind of just shrug now and say, all right, what's up next?
Because he's done it? Like, is this the third or fourth season where he's averaged a triple-double?
I would give you guys the answer of this. I think the reason we shrug our shoulders and we're not very impressed by it is because when he was running for the MVP and people were impressed, the way he went about getting those triple-doubles, kind of a bad teammate. Pushing teammates out of the way to collect that 10th rebound.
Get that, Joe!
Forcing assists when you have the open shot. You know, stuff like that. And
was
I
he
also
Stat
think,
Patton?
Oh, yeah, he definitely was. But I think also there's an element to this where it's an arbitrary thing. You know, like, it's cool that he's doing it. And it's great that Oscar Robertson did it. Jason Kidd had a whole bunch of them. Magic has a whole bunch. LeBron. But, like, are you really...
Like, you know what's funny is I always felt like I was going to compare the triple double with the triple crown, not in horse racing, but baseball. And like Miguel Cabrera, do it? It's the first time that anyone had done it since Yaz did it back in 67.
Amazing, yeah.
And like, so like the triple crown in baseball still has this kind of.
Well, but does it go into the
thing to it?
Not only what Chris was saying about that Westbrook still isn't one big. And no. He had the chance, and then he had the falling out with Durant. And then last year he's in Houston, and then they have the falling out with him and Harden. You know, and now he's in Washington, and Washington was really bad early. They've been great lately. Thank goodness, too, because now the Bulls don't have to, you know, they have a shot at this number 1 through 4 pick.
Yeah, they have fallen off my radar.
Yeah, me too.
Like, which is probably not something you want to admit as you're a co-host of a sports talk radio show.
No, it's been really unwatchable.
It's hard to watch.
It's very
hard. Like, there's nothing there.
I would also throw into this, like, right on the top 10, Ben Simmons is 13th. Luka Doncic is 11th. Jokic is 9th all-time. Like, all three of those guys are going to pass the guys at the top of the board, you know, 10, 15 years from now anyway. You know what I'm saying?
What was Doncic's triple-double the other day? Didn't he have, like, 30s? As far as numbers, didn't he do a 30-30 triple-double or something like that? He had a crazy
he was the Sammy Sosa of the triple-double
the other night.
The 30-30 guy. Hey, can I tell you about this story? I did not see this in Nashville, but this occurred, I believe, this weekend. A man arrested for swinging his colostomy bag at police officers.
This is amazing. Like,
let me tell you something. I used to always call it Nash Vegas and think I was funny. It is truly Nash Vegas. It should be, like... Nash New Orleans is
what about Nash Orleans?
No, there you go. Nash Orleans. I mean, it's gotten crazy down there. Metro police arrested a man on multiple charges, including assaulting two police officers after he took off his colostomy bag and swung it to strike the officer.
So it's all the stuff in there, right?
He was drunk and holding a bottle of beer, blocking the outside emergency exit door at Kid Rock's bar down there.
That is awesome. It is awesome. This guy's fighting with police, and he's using
his colostomy bag
is a weapon now. That's very Nashville.
I can't top it, so I'm going to leave it there. I mean, how can I get any more traction than that?
Fantastic.
Doc!
332-3776. And what do you do now if you're the White Sox? And Ken Rosenthal with a very interesting article about the concerns about Tony La Russa. We'll talk to our friend Carmen DeFalco and see if he's revved up about the Sox next.